U.S. media tends to make it seem like Israel is under siege by the Palestinians, when in reality it's the Israeli army that are in Palestinian towns, cities, surrounding Palestinian towns and cities with Israeli tanks, guns, missiles, helicopters, and not the other way around.
From the studios of Freak Radio 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz, California, it's time for the Weekly Freak Show. Headlines and highlights for the week ending Thursday, January 4th, 2001. My name's the V-Man, and I'll be your host for this half-hour look back at the news and features not heard in or glanced over by the corporate-controlled media. On this week's program, Freak Radio's Old Lady Scar Arms speaks with Iman Desuki of Global Exchange about the current situation in the occupied territories of Israel and the United States media's response to the crisis, plus this week's Spotlight Sound. Stay tuned for the Weekly Freak Show, coming up next. And now headlines for the week ending Thursday, January 4th, 2001. On Friday, December 29th, 2000, four new luxury homes at Island Estates in Mount Sinai, Long Island, New York, were set ablaze, resulting in $2 million damage. The Earth Liberation Front has officially claimed responsibility for the arsons. A communique sent out by the ELF stated, "This hopefully provided a firm message that we will not tolerate the destruction of our island." This is the 10th major ELF action to occur on Long Island in recent months. The communique continued, "Recently, hundreds of houses have been built over much of Mount Sinai's picturesque landscape, and developers now plan to build a further 189 luxury houses over the farms and forests adjacent to Island Estates. The earth isn't dying, it's being killed, and those who are killing it have names and addresses. What are you doing for the earth tonight? No compromise in defense of our earth. Stop urban sprawl, or we will." No suspects have been arrested in connection with the arsons. The tiny island of Vieques off the east coast of Puerto Rico has been used as a bombing target for decades by the United States Navy. On Sunday, December 31st, 2000, members of the Vieques community dismantled several hundred feet of fence at Camp Garcia to protest the Navy's plans for continued bombing. This week, the Navy made preparations for bombing exercises to take place in the second half of January. Protesters took down large extensions of the perimeter fence that separates the military from the civilian area in the eastern third of the island. "This is an indication of things to come," said Ismael Guadalupe, one of the principal Viequense organizers. "We will take back what natural right belongs to us. Our land, our right to live in peace." The protesters say depleted uranium and napalm bombs are everywhere along the bombing range. Outgoing President Bill Clinton has promised the Navy will leave by May 2003 if the island's 9,400 residents vote to expel it in a referendum expected later this year. Calling for the closure of the infamous School of the Americas, Rebecca Johnson, a 21-year-old college senior, announced on Monday, January 1st, that she will abstain from food for the month of January. Simultaneously, Johnson will vigil at the main entrance to Fort Benning in Columbus, Georgia. Fort Benning hosts the United States Army's School of the Americas and its successor, the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation. Many of the SOA's graduates have been implicated in large-scale and widespread human rights abuse in Latin America. The Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation is widely perceived as the SOA's clone and is scheduled to open January 17th. The U.S. House of Representatives, by a narrow 10-vote margin, passed a measure to reform the school's focus. "By changing the name of the SOA, our government is trying to distance itself from past atrocities committed by SOA graduates. I am here to say that we still remember," Johnson said. Her fast comes in the wake of the November 19th, 2000 vigil action at the base. On that day, over 1,700 vigilers were arrested on trespass charges and forbidden to return to the base. One protester, Josh Raisler Cohn, is to be tried in federal court in Columbus on January 22nd for a banner hanging. And finally, police in Quito, the capital city of Ecuador, fired tear gas on a crowd of about 300 students on Wednesday, January 3rd. The students were protesting government cuts that have driven up fuel prices. Last week, Ecuador's government doubled prices for home cooking fuel, raised gas prices by 25%, and bumped up bus fares by as much as 75%. The cuts are part of President Gustavo Noboa's economic recovery plan. Multinational banking institutions, led by the International Monetary Fund, have offered a three-year, $2 billion aid package contingent on austerity measures. 44 high school and university students were arrested after they tried to disrupt traffic around the state-run university in central Quito and six nearby public high schools. One student suffered injuries after being struck by a tear gas canister. The bus fare hike was halted that same day after a judge ruled it unconstitutional. And those were headlines for the week ending Thursday, January 4th, 2001. From January 15th through the 28th, 2001, Global Exchange, a nonprofit research, education, and action center dedicated to promoting global awareness among the U.S. public, will send a fact-finding delegation to occupied Palestine and Israel at this extremely crucial moment in the history of the conflict. Too often, the roots of the conflict are misunderstood here in the United States, contributing to inadequate media coverage. Iman Dasuki is a coordinator for the Palestinian Reality Tour Program of Global Exchange. In this interview with Freak Radio's Old Lady Scar Arms, Iman discusses some of the events which led to the current situation in the occupied lands, how the U.S. media are responding to the crisis, and what it will take to bring about a lasting peace in the troubled region.
The Gaza Strip and the West Bank have been occupied since 1967. Along also with the occupation of the West Bank, the State of Israel also occupied East Jerusalem. Before the 1967 war, Jerusalem was sort of a city that was divided in half. West Jerusalem was Israeli, and East Jerusalem belonged to, you know, the Jordanian colonizers at the time, who also colonized the West Bank. And in 1993, as many of us are probably aware, the Oslo Peace Accords were signed, and this basically was sort of heralded this new found sort of spirited, solution, a viable solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. The Palestinians was thought that they had finally fought off the chains of Israeli occupation. The Palestinian Authority was created in order to allow the Palestinians some sense of sovereignty, of self-control, of self-determination. But unfortunately, 7 years later, as we've seen, the accords have failed miserably. Palestinians are still actually living under worse conditions now than they had ever been before the Oslo Accords. There have actually been an increase in the building of illegal Jewish settlements on Palestinian land in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip since the signing of the Oslo Accords. More homes have been demolished, more Palestinian homes have been demolished since the signing of the Oslo Accords. An increase. So really, Palestinians have seen more brutal occupation policies being imposed on them more so than they had been seeing before the signing of the Oslo Accords. So the Oslo Accords were kind of this great opportunity for the Israeli government to look like it was really pro-peace, when in fact it never had any intention of following through with a sustainable solution for the Palestinians. And so they really used the Accords to sort of put out sort of a good image of themselves to the international community, while at the same time, in the same breath, continuing their occupation forces and occupation policies, and actually increasing them. And so really the Oslo Accords were a way in which sanctioned occupation policies, the Israeli government's occupation policies against the Palestinians. So after 7 years of realizing that the PA was a big joke, the Palestinian Authority was basically pawns of the Israeli government, who were placed in control sort of as a native sort of militia to carry out the same things that the Israeli government was carrying out, but instead of being carried out by Israeli soldiers, they were now being carried out by Palestinian soldiers. The Palestinian people, the grassroots, were fed up. They just couldn't take it anymore. And the whole sort of, we call it the second Intifada, or the Al-Aqsa Intifada, began really with Ariel Sharon, who is sort of a notorious figure in the whole Israeli-Palestinian conflict. He was the general back in 1982 who sort of orchestrated the famous, or I should say notorious, massacre in Sabra and Shatila, which are two refugee camps in Lebanon. Basically, Ariel Sharon was the general who opened up the refugee camps and allowed the Lebanese phalangist army to enter and rape and murder and massacre over 2,000 Palestinian refugees in these refugee camps. So he was kind of like the key figure in that massacre. So you can imagine that he's sort of a very hated man, among Palestinians, and also internationally he's sort of, been condemned internationally and also locally by the Israeli government itself. And so here comes Ariel Sharon, protected by over 1,000 Israeli soldiers and police. He marches into the Temple Mount, or Al-Haram al-Sharif, as the Palestinians call it, which is, a holy site both for the Jews and the Muslims, I should say. And he basically marches in and says, "We will never," in a statement that says, "We will never give up the sovereignty of this Temple Mount. This will always be under Israeli sovereignty." So you can imagine the uproar that kind of visit, or invasion caused among the Palestinians. And the next day, several confrontations with Israeli police and soldiers and Palestinian young men and boys erupted, and hence the beginning of this second Intifada.
From the studios of Freak Radio 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz, California, you're listening to the Weekly Freak Show. Please stay tuned for contact information at the end of this half-hour broadcast. We'll be back with more from Iman Dasuki of Global Exchange, speaking with Freak Radio's Old Lady Scar Arms, right after this week's spotlight sound, Stone Throwing Riot, from the band Twisted Nixon.
Demonstrations that often turned violent as stones and Molotov cocktails were thrown at Israeli soldiers and civilians. The soldiers often shot back in the crowds, killing many teenagers.
On the West Bank, armaments in the Gaza, terrorists on the border. What's this? A new world order.
Guaranteed by your guns, oppression by your religion. said they're dropping dead.